Hey, teacher friends, I want to make sure that you know about my two children's books from the Caring Critters series, Felipe the Feeling Frog and Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle. These children's books are invaluable tools for teaching social-emotional skills in your classroom. In Felipe the Feeling Frog, kids walk alongside Felipe as he discovers that all feelings are okay, and he learns practical strategies for regulating his emotions. Felipe and his friends in the book help children identify and manage feelings like sadness, happiness, frustration, making emotional learning engaging and relatable. Then there's Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle, where Trixie explores the difference between expected and unexpected choices. Through her journey, children learn how to make thoughtful decisions that positively affect their friends and understand the importance of respectful behavior. Both books feature the charming illustrations of Denise Walker, which bring these important lessons to life in a way that kids can easily connect with. And they're written by me, a kindergarten teacher who understands the social-emotional needs of young students. Enhance your classroom with Felipe the Feeling Frog and Trixie the Thoughtful Turtle, and watch your students thrive in their social-emotional development with the Caring Critters series. Hi, teacher friends. It's Zipa from Kindergarten Cafe. I have an awesome interview for you today with Heidi from Droppin' Knowledge with Heidi. She was on the podcast before, if that name sounds familiar, and we talked all about what the science of reading even is and what to do about it and all that stuff. And today we're specifically talking about how to teach letters because it's really relevant right now. We're all teaching letters and sounds right now. There's so many just easy small shifts that no matter what curriculum you use, you can make in your teaching starting tomorrow. And then there's bigger picture things that are really great to hear. And I had a lot of aha moments. So I hope you enjoy it. And I can't wait to hear what you think. You're listening to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast, where kindergarten teachers come to learn classroom-tested tips and tricks and teaching ideas they can use in their classroom right away. I'm Zeba, creator and founder of Kindergarten Cafe, and I help kindergarten teachers with everything they need from arrival to dismissal in order to save time, work smarter, not harder, and support students with engaging and purposeful lessons. I'm here to cheer you on through your successes and breakthroughs and offer support and resources so you never have to feel stuck or alone. Ready to start saving time and reducing your stress, all while using effective and purposeful lessons that students love? Let's get started. Hi, everyone. We're back with Heidi. I invited her back. She was on a previous podcast about the science of reading. Heidi with is from Droppin' Knowledge with Heidi. And I consider her an expert in our field today of like, what is going on with the latest literacy research and how to use that literacy research as a teacher in the classroom to best teach our students literacy. And Heidi offered to come back to talk to us all about teaching letter sounds and letter names and all of that. And it's perfect for this time of year because I don't know about anyone else, but that's all I'm doing right now. So, Heidi, I don't know if you want to introduce yourself a little bit more for people that might not have heard the first episode we did together.
Sure, of course. So my name is Heidi. I actually taught first grade for over 10 years, and then most recently taught kindergarten and then 4K, which is what we call it here. I know it's called different things around the country, no matter, depending on where you are. And then I have been a national letters trainer for letters early childhood, which is where we talk about the alphabet. So I love talking about all of those things. For the past 4 years, I did my first science of reading conference this summer, which was really exciting, the science of reading mini con for K-5 teachers. So that was fun. And work with my husband now. We published a line of decodable books, some other books with a publisher with different phonics activities and things like that.
So, and I recently purchased some last year, and I can attest they are great.
Decodable books? Oh, thank you so much. Yes. We love being able to provide them to schools. We're actually writing some more right now.
Awesome.
I just feel like we can never have enough of those. And kids need those books when they're early readers that they can actually read and don't have to memorize or guess words.
Yeah. It was actually the room parents. They were like, hey, we have a little extra money. Can we buy some books? And I was like, oh, Yes, actually, I've been eyeing these. So they were able to get a set of one of your earlier sets of decodables. And they were like, wow, these, I actually really like these. I might have to look into these. So I'm like, yeah, these are what kids need right now.
Yes. And some people will say they don't have to be 100% decodable. And that's true. But it's also helpful to have some that are 100% decodable and super like mine are, because then it helps really build that confidence and that fluency for our younger readers. So
yes.
Hopefully you've seen that with your students.
Oh, absolutely. I'm all about the decodable books. And then we talked about that a lot in our last episode. So if you're like, wait, I want to know more, I'll put the link below to that so you can listen to the previous episode. But we're going to back it way up on the scope and sequence here. Teaching, before we ever get to teaching reading, teaching letter sounds and letter names and all of that. So you're a letters trainer. Do you want to tell us what that means and things like that?
Being a national letters trainer, you just work with districts and schools, and we even do some public sessions for individuals all over the country who want to be trained. So my husband did letters training for K-8 for volumes 1 and 2, and then I was for letters early childhood, which focuses more on our preschool students, so pre-K and kindergarten. So a lot of kindergarten teachers are like, where do I fall in if I want letters training? And it could be either, right? So it can be, they could really benefit from both, because in early childhood is where we talk a lot about those important skills like phonemic awareness and teaching the alphabet.
Yeah. And letters is a curriculum?
No, it is not a curriculum.
Oh, okay.
So it's literally just training for teachers that shares the research on how we should teach reading. So, yeah. I told them that they actually, I feel like they should come out with the curriculum, because I know it would be 100% rooted in the research, because that's literally what they do. We just share the research. That's all we talk about. And we talk about in the trainings too, like, we are program agnostic. We don't recommend any programs. We don't do anything like that. We just are sharing the research, because just like letters believes, like I also believe that teacher knowledge is key. Then you can teach effectively with any program, no matter.
Right. You can make an informed decision about what's best for the kids in front of you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what do you recommend the best practices, or what does the research say are the best practices for teaching letters?
Yeah. Well, that's a loaded question. It's so funny, because I used to really think that it's teaching the alphabet, like how hard can it be? We teach the letters and we practice them and we talk about them a lot in different ways. And then we move on, right?
Mm-hmm. I was the same way.
I'm like, this is basic, guys. The letter people right there. But there's so much more that goes into it that I didn't realize until I started doing those trainings, because there's so much research. There's been so much research done on teaching the alphabet, and there's a lot still to do. But from the research that's been done, we can see a lot of different things that we can be doing maybe differently that is better for our students. So there's a lot of things that go into teaching the alphabet more than I used to think that there was. So do you want to just start with, there's 6 things that research supports in doing every time you teach a letter. I can start with that.
I love that. That sounds great.
That's pretty easy and pretty basic from what we're talking about. The 6 things. So every time you teach a letter, you can do these 6 things. And I guess we can talk about the scope and sequence for teaching a letter, since I said every time you teach a letter, in a little bit. But when you do teach a letter, you want to cover the properties and the characteristics of that letter. So you want to teach a letter name. There is a lot of research supporting letter name knowledge. And I gave you a link that I think the listeners will have, that they can go to my website. And then there's a link there that they can click to read some of this research around too, if they're interested, if somebody's interested in reading more of that research.
Yeah.
But teaching the letter name, and then also teaching uppercase and lowercase at the same time, the shape of the letter, the sound, and the mouth position, like what is our mouth doing when we say that letter sound, and then having a target picture or pictures, and then writing the letter. And if anybody listening, or maybe even you right now, is thinking, that's a lot, okay, that's too much.
I'm thinking it's really, it's like my curriculum that we use, Foundations. I'm like, check, check, check. Okay, good.
Hey, I'm so excited to hear that. I actually thought it was too much for my kids.
Yeah. And it sounds like a lot.
It sounds like a lot. And I'm like, every time. And when I was teaching 4K, I did this. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so much. And it takes like literally to cover all of those things. takes less than, you can do it in less than 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out it really wasn't too much for my kids either. And I guess you can probably attest to that as well. They are like sponges at this age, so they really pick it up.
And they get into the groove of it. Obviously, the first couple of times you do it, it doesn't take 3 minutes. But we start a few letters at a time and we build on to it. But so by the time they've accumulated enough letters where it would take a while, they've gotten the routine down. So it's much faster.
Exactly. And thanks for clarifying that. Because yeah, of course, in the beginning, everything takes so much longer.
Yes.
You're in that stage right now. Everything just taking so much longer. And then when you are working on those things with the alphabet, then you're going to cycle through, which I'll get into in a little bit, but they don't have to master all of those things right away.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's the key. You're going to teach those things. We're going to talk about those things. They don't have to master all of those things before you move on to the next letter.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to come back to that letter.
Right. If you're thinking, I teach them how to write the letter and then like they have to know the letter before you move on to another letter, like that is going to take too long. Because even we're working on that all year, we're continuing to refresh on how to write the letters.
Yes, exactly. But
I do think the name one is a good one to highlight, like teaching the letter name, because I do remember in my teaching career, there was a couple of years there where it was like, you don't need the letter name at all. Just focus on the sounds. And like we stopped even assessing for letter names. And I was like, but I want to know, say know the letter name, because I'm going to talk about like, for handwriting, like the letter names are going to come up. And so it's good to know that my gut instinct, there's some research behind it.
There's a lot of research behind it. And I see a lot of times on social media, people arguing about this and people saying, you don't need to teach a letter name like you were saying, because, and it makes sense. I get that thought process because you're like, you don't need the letter name to be able to read. You need that sound. But there's so much research supporting letter name knowledge and supporting it as also a predictor for later literacy learning. And then also, so if anybody out there has taken letters early childhood or is interested in taking letters early childhood, we do a deep dive into the letters. And it's so interesting because we do way more with the letters than I ever thought I would ever do. But one thing that we do is talk about the letter names and the sounds that are in the letter names.
Mm.
For example, B has that sound information in that letter name, right? So when I say B, I'm saying B, E, I'm saying the B sound. I'm saying that sound of the letter. And a lot of letters have that sound information in the letter name. So kids can pick up on that. And so there actually was a study done that where kids were taught, this is from a meta-analysis from 2010, Piesta and Wagner. When kids were taught letter sounds, they only learned the letter sounds. But when kids were taught letter names, they also learned the sounds. They learned names and sounds. And that could be, they concluded that it's likely because a lot of those names have the sounds in them.
That's so interesting. Like I've never thought about it that way, but it makes so much sense. So it's just more bang for your buck.
Exactly. You're teaching those letter names. And of course, and then the deep dive is actually really fun because then you talk about all these different characteristics of each letter and what could possibly make these letters easier for kids to learn, and then these letters a little bit trickier for kids to learn. So there's a lot of things that actually go into teaching the alphabet that I know personally I never thought of before, but can really help you as a teacher getting ready to teach the alphabet.
Absolutely. A couple of things that I've noticed like over my years of progression as a teacher, I picked up on like I was doing it and then I noticed the kids are doing it now and I'm trying to stop it right away, is adding that like extra vowel sound to a lot of the sounds. Like you were very clear about b and not ba, right? Like all my kids right now are saying like, we haven't taught this letter yet, or we're going to do it next week. But still, they're like, bah. And I'm like, no. We're going to stop this right now. So I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit for teachers that might not have thought about it.
Yeah, that's another thing that I never really thought of. And I feel like, so when we're in the classroom and we're trying to teach these letters, we're trying to be loud enough, clear enough for all students to hear. So say, bah is easier, right? But then when I was teaching first grade, I noticed that if kids thought ba and ta, when they're trying to blend, they're like ba at ta. And that becomes an issue, right? And so I had actually a very respected, in the world of science reading, a researcher come after me for saying this. And, you know, the
drama.
Yeah, it was the second time he came after me. But I stand by what I said both times. And I stand by this because having been in the classroom, I think that's sometimes there is a difference between the researchers and the classroom. And yeah. I always want to bridge that. Because if you haven't taught kids to read and taught kids who are trying to blend these sounds, then you may think that there is no correct pronunciation for those letter sounds or those phonemes, right?
They but said when, that?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Ooh. I did claim that there's no correct way. I think it was something, I'm not, don't quote me. I don't know exactly what he said, but it was along the lines of that there is not a correct or incorrect way to pronounce a phoneme or letter sound. Because of some of my videos that were he had seen, yeah. I was saying we should clip the sounds. And yeah. the reason that I stand by that, the reason that I think we should clip the sounds is because it does matter later on. Some kids will get it, but it does affect kids.
I agree with you because I've seen it too. I've seen it where they're adding a U or to their writing when it shouldn't be there, or they're having trouble when they're sounding out the word that they're adding that sound and they're confused.
Yes. And so that's really this. That's, you know, when you come, when a researcher like that comes free, you're like, oh my gosh, am I wrong? You know, and you really have to think about it. But then I think about it from a teaching standpoint. And like you said, way too often, you know, those extra sounds don't help the kids when they're trying to blend those letters. So I had to reteach myself because B especially is, mm-hmm. that was a hard one to reteach. So now I like teach myself to open and close my lips really quickly. And then I can tell my kids that too. Like we're not saying ba with our mouths still open. We're going to say b and then close our lips again so that we can make sure that we're clipping that sound. So, you know, there's little tricks that you'll find that you'll start using when you kind of watch yourself with clipping these sounds and then teach them to your kids too. And those, especially those continuous sounds, like the sounds you can hold as long as you can hold your breath, like, yeah, do that when you teach the letter. Instead of, I've actually heard people say M sound. And I'm like, just hold it. If you just hold it, it'll be much better.
The one I heard my students, the first letter we taught them was T. And so that's the one I heard like today was like ta. And I was like, we're going to stop this right now. So I feel like I hear it in ta and then,
There's a couple of them, and mostly it's the stop sounds, puh, those sounds that have to stop. But I have heard it in those continuous sounds as well, because I think just sometimes it was mostly from parents or students that I was hearing this from. But I think that they get into like the buh, cuh.
Yeah.
And then it becomes like this pattern that they kind of like pick up on. And it's like, wait, we don't want to do that.
So when you're teaching letter sounds and things, are you talking to your kids about this is a continuous sound or this is a stop sound or like, is there language that you use about that?
Yeah. So I found it really helpful. And, you know, people might think, again, this is too much for kids, but I did it with my 4K students. I found it really helpful to let them know those things. Mm-hmm. I did talk about, let's see if our voice box is on. Put your hand on your throat and now say, D, and you can feel there's a vibration there. Now, let's put our hand on our voice box again and let's say, I don't feel anything. That means my voice box is off.
Mm-hmm.
And they love learning about those things. You can talk about touching your nose when they say or to feel it because it's a nasal and you don't have to touch them that's a nasal, but mm-hmm. you can the sound comes through their nose and they can feel that vibration there. And so for some dialects, that's helpful because some dialects, instead of like can, they like can't. It's like that whiny A, they call it. And that's because the M and the N are coming through our nose. So those are things that you definitely, and then you could say, oh, look at this sound. Let's see how long we can hold it. Ready? Let's hold it as long as we can. And then go with the students and just let them know that's a you can say continuous or you can come up with a vocabulary that works for you. But yeah, you can definitely, I think the more that you teach them about the letters, that's why teacher knowledge is so important. Mm-hmm. Those stop sounds, the voice box, these things I didn't know about before.
Yeah, you
know,
I didn't either.
Yeah, now that you know about them, then you can teach it to your kids. And then the more they know about a letter, the better. It's just more knowledge.
The one letter sound that I'm worried that I add the extra sound to, but I'm confused about myself, is Y.
Yeah. So Y R I hear about a lot because like for R
R is tricky. Yeah,
it is tricky. And it takes practice for us as teachers and parents too, because we're so used to like er or ruh, but it's not either of those. What I started doing is say rabbit, but I don't say abbot. I tell my kids that too. It's just like, we're going to say rabbit, but don't say abbot. We're going to hold the R. Ready? Like, and then they just kind of get that. It's a continuous sound. And the same with Y. It is a continuous sound too. And so if we say yeah, or it's more like the E, almost sounds like E, right?
Mm.
But what I do is say yellow without L-O. So E, L-O. So even if you try it, you're like, it does sound like E, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
thinking
good...
about it, you should try it.
Well, I think, I know, E, it sounds like E, but that's not the sound that E makes. So E, yellow. Yeah. I think in general, like, that's a good tip is if you're trying to remember the isolated sound because you want to say it really accurately, is to say that keyword without the word, like say it in your head, because I do that with apple because I want to make sure I'm saying the correct, like, because there's so many A sounds that I want to make sure I'm really isolating the short A sound. So I say apple like every time I'm trying to like say the A one.
Yeah, I think that's so helpful because even, you know, if I'm saying it in isolation, I notice a lot of times I do still say it wrong. And I'm like, okay, let me go back. I'm going to say my word and then I'm going to say the rest of the word. And it's just so, so helpful. And the good thing about that R and the Y is that they are continuous sounds. So you can hold them, which makes it a little bit easier for the tricky sounds like that.
I'm going to remember that this year. I'm going to do it differently this year. Are there keywords? I know I've seen keywords that bother me. Are there keywords that you've seen that bother you?
For sure.
Ones to avoid.
Yeah, and I never thought about these things before either. Like elephant. I'm like, what's wrong with elephant? But like L. Kids are the name of the letter L. Instead of being able to really isolate that short E. Xylophone is the worst one. Owl is horrible. I've even seen chicken for C. I'm like, what are we doing? I know. Yeah.
So I know why those bother me. Do you want to tell people why those are horrible?
Yeah. So it's just you really want kids to be able to isolate and hear the sound that you're trying to teach. So I will see people say, I is not for ice cream. Well, it is if you're teaching the long I. Can isolate that very easily. Ice cream. I can hear that long I. And when people say that, they're really just talking about because usually we teach the short sound first. But I can still be for ice cream. You just like elephant, a better keyword would be echo or edge because there you can really isolate that sound and really hear that short E. So X is tricky because no words start with the X, making the X sound. So it's always going to be at the end. Like a good keyword will have that sound at the end, like X or fox or something like that. So that way you can hear the true sound that the letter typically represents.
Right. So I see a lot of times I'll see like a soft G for a G sound, which, like you said, if you're teaching the soft G, fine. But if this is the first introduction, you're probably starting with that hard G sound. And so you don't want like giraffe to be your keyword.
Correct. So in my mnemonic alphabet, I have both. I have a long vowel sound and I have a short vowel sound. I have soft C, hard C, soft G, hard G. Because sometimes in kindergarten, we do introduce that.
Oh,
we just expose our students to that. So when I see people say G is not for giraffe, it is, just not at, maybe not at this point in the school year for you.
Right.
It's not, but it is a rare sound.
I think, and that exposing thing is, I do that all the time because if they say, if we're coming up with words or whatever, and it just naturally comes up where they'll say like giraffe or whatever the example is, but I'll say, oh, that's a soft G sound. We haven't learned that yet. But like sometimes G says, and that's the soft G sound. So just a quick, I'm acknowledging that like you're not wrong if you're saying like G words, but they are, some of them are ready to get that first exposure to those phonics topics and skills, and then know that they'll get it for the next couple of years in school.
Yeah, and I think that exposure really helps kids to not feel so confused later on when they encounter those words. Mm-hmm. Then they start to think those are tricky words or those words aren't supposed to be spelled like that when they actually are regular regularly spelled words. Just having that exposure, I think, is so helpful.
We talk about this, I think, in our last podcast about like high frequency words or trick words or whatever you want to call it, but teaching the pattern, even if you're not teaching the phonics pattern in kindergarten, you can still teach them like, this is an AI sound that's going to say A, and you'll learn that. But it helps them to be like, there are reasons why the letters might sound different than the way I'm taught them in kindergarten. And that's important because they will be reading a book that's not 100% decodable or doing an assessment or something that's not 100% decodable. And they'll be frustrated because they're trying to sound out the word with the letter sounds exactly the way you taught them the letter sounds, and they're going to be frustrated. So it's important to expose them to the fact that not all words are sounding with the short vowel sounds that we taught them.
That letters represent more than one sound almost all the time. And so that's actually one other thing that I changed. It's super simple, and people kind of sometimes think it's dumb because it's so minor, but I think it makes such a difference. So instead of saying like G says G, I started saying G spells or G represents or can represent G, because G also represents other sounds as well. And so just knowing that G doesn't just say G, and you'll learn. Yeah, I mean, I'm not teaching that to them right now, but I'm at least letting them know that most of these letters are going to spell other sounds too later on. So these are the first sounds that we're learning. These are their main sounds, right?
Yeah.
The ones that we see the most often. But all of these letters are also going to represent some other sounds later on. So that's one small change, one small thing that I started doing that I feel like helped my students to know. Because in first grade, they just think that everything is so crazy. English is, by first grade, they're like, oh my gosh, English doesn't make any sense. And honestly, I used to say that too, but the more you know.
So. Yeah. What are some other small shifts that teachers listening could make when they're teaching letters this year?
Yeah. So again, that teaching what your mouth does, that's one of the six things I talked about, but we didn't go into detail with it. But that was something that made such a difference for my students, especially the trickier sounds like G that are made in the back of the mouth, and talking about what my tongue is doing. I mean, in the classroom, you can go around and kind of show your students what your mouth is doing. If they can't see you, have them have these little mirrors or practice with the partner. And just watching, what is their lips doing? What are their lips doing? What is their tongue doing? What is their mouth? Is their mouth open, closed? That type of thing really, really made a difference in my kids learning their letter sounds, for sure.
Yeah, I definitely try to, but I could do more of an effort with that. But the time of the year when it always comes out, when I'm making a very big deal about what our mouth is doing, is teaching the difference between TH and F. Because when we're introducing that diagram, they think like every word, they aren't developmentally saying the TH sound yet. And like they hear it as F. So I'm very big about like, is your tongue sticking out or is your teeth like hitting your lips, you know, like for the F. So that's one that I definitely talk about a lot.
I think it can make a really big difference, especially if students are getting stuck on sounds, and especially sounds that are like sister sounds. They sometimes call them like B and P, It made exactly the same. The only difference there is my voice box on or off. And same with T and D. So those kinds of things can be really helpful. Teaching about the voice box and showing your mouth what it's doing for sounds like that can be really helpful too.
Are there resources on your website or that you know of for people to go learn how to talk about the way your mouth is a shape being shaped when we make the letter sounds?
Right. So I do have mouth pictures. So little pictures that kind of show what your mouth should look like when you're making the sound. So I do have that, but I don't know if there's any, you know, that tells you exactly like what to say or how to teach that. What I would do is just pay attention to what my mouth is doing. Hold that letter if it's a continuous sound, and then pay attention, like, what is my tongue doing? What is, like, for G, G. I'm like, okay, what is my mouth doing? So I look at myself and I'm like, okay, my mouth is slightly open and my tongue is like touching the back of the roof of my mouth, and just kind of like explain that how I can think of to explain it. I don't think there's a right or wrong way when you're making the letter sound. Just watch what your mouth is doing. So maybe practice in the mirror the night before you're going to do that one, and then you know, just tell your kids what's going on with that when and see if they can do it, and then show your partner you can do it. And
that's good. You know. That's basically how I did it so far. So I'm on the right track.
Yeah, you are.
A lot of phonics curriculums have different orders for the letters, or that's a question I get a lot of, like, well, what's the order you teach the letters in? And, you know, I have a certain curriculum, so I follow that curriculum. But is there a right or wrong order to teaching the letters?
There is not. So earlier we kind of touched on, like, oh, when you teach the letters again. So there's a study that they did that showed really good results for kindergarten students who, instead of a letter of the week, they were taught a letter each day. And so, like, the first 26 school days, they were taught the alphabet in, like, say, the ABC order. They say they just started with the order. Then, after that 26 school days, they started over and taught the alphabet again in a different order. Mm. So, maybe by, like, print features, you know, like Handwriting Without Tears, or Gordon Gillingham does as well. So, maybe now you're going to teach it in that order. And then they cycled again. And so, throughout the year, they got like 6 or 7 cycles of teaching the alphabet. So they got that repeated practice that kids really need. And so there, you're not really worrying about your kids mastering either. Because, yeah, you're doing a letter of the day. That's, you know. And so they did with 6 or 7 different scope and sequences. And so there is no right or wrong. I would say, if you can, to do a couple. Own Name Advantage is one that it can be really helpful, especially in the beginning of the year. But it would change every year. So you'd have to look at your roster. And I don't know about you, but like whenever I would get my class list, I'm like, oh, I have a lot of J names this year. Or a lot of, right? It always
happens. Mine are all A and E this year.
A and E. So those are tricky ones to start with your alphabet sequence. But you kind of go through and look at the letters that are most prevalent in your students' names and make your scope and sequence that way. Those are the letters that they're focusing on right now anyways, right? They focus on that in pre-K. So, and they love to learn about their names and their friends' names, and then you can incorporate that. So that could even be another scope and sequence. Another scope and sequence that I've seen is teaching the letters first that have the sound in the letter name, and then moving through to the ones that don't. Like, so B would be early in the scope and sequence, but H would be like way at the end because there's sound information. You don't hear in the, when we say H. So there's a lot of different orders that you could teach the alphabet in. And if you can get those cycles in throughout the year, I would just change the order each time.
What do you think about like ABC order?
I think it's perfectly fine. I know that there's some people saying that you can't teach ABC order. If it's the only order that you're ever teaching, I think that might not be as effective because you want your kids to know that these letters exist outside of the alphabet song or outside of this order, right? But developmentally, it can be helpful, especially in 4K and kindergarten, because they've learned that song. They know that song. And that can, you know, give them confidence going through learning the alphabet in ABC order. I still think it's a scope and sequence that we can use. I just don't think it should be the only one.
Okay. I love that. Yeah. This is a cautionary tale if you are going to do the alphabet order. This is back when I wasn't like explicitly teaching words or sounds. Like I was like, you said, it was like, it's the alphabet. We'll teach it. And then also we'll go on to other things. Towards the end of the year, I was doing like an assessment and I discovered one boy, I wanted them to write a letter of the alphabet in each box. And he's like, there's not enough room in this box. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he wrote LMNO like in one box as like one letter. And I was like, oh gosh. So cautionary tale, if you are going to do the order like that, make sure to distinguish those are different letters because in the song they jumble together.
They do. And I've seen teachers now where they go L, M, N, O. So they kind of stop and chant or cheer.
Love that part.
Split that up because, yeah, kids can sing that for a little while when they're just learning the song. But then like when you're, if you're going to go over it in your classroom and do the song or go over that alphabet in ABC order, slowing it down and chanting that part out can be really helpful too.
That's a great.
Kids might hear like M&M or, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a great shift. Easy to do.
Yes.
You touched on this real quick about like letter a day, letter a week. I know there's a whole philosophy around a letter a week. You want to talk about that? A week of, what is it called?
Letter of the week?
The letter of the week. I just sounded weird when I said that. The letter of the week. Like I've heard it many times, but so letter of the week, thoughts?
I know. And I'm always like, when I talk about this because I know from a teaching standpoint, teaching a letter of the week, and for those who have been doing it for a while, this is hard because, like for me, I have my bins and I have everything ready for that week to teach that letter, and I put it all out and we do it for a week and it's great. And, you know, thinking about just doing a letter of the day, do you know how much like more work that is? Like if I'm putting stuff in centers or putting stuff over here, like I know it can be a lot. So just knowing that from a teacher standpoint, I know that this can be a little like overwhelming sometimes to hear, but the letter of the week really is just more of a tradition and there's no real research supporting it. The research shows, like cognitive research shows, that kids need that repeated practice over time. And then a lot of other research shows that teaching a letter of the day or even a couple letters a week is a more efficient way for teaching the alphabet versus just the letter of the week.
Yeah, I mean, if you just think about it, that's 26 weeks of school before you get to the full alphabet. So that's where I think about it, of why it makes more sense. So my curriculum does 2 to 3 letters a week. And they get that repeated practice throughout the whole time of all the letters we've previously learned.
Yeah. And that is one of the points that they make in the research, is because it takes that 26 weeks just to get through. And then think about your kids who already know the letter B and spending a whole nother week on it. And even the kids who don't, they spend a week on the letter B. And I'm not saying that you never talk about B again, but now you're moved on to this letter and it takes too long to really come back to the letter B, especially if you're teaching, you know, the writing of it, having the mouth position, all these different things.
Yeah.
It just takes too long to come back to it. And you can get a lot done. And actually, in this research study, they did, it was just 10 to 15 minute lessons with the students. So it's 10 to 15 minutes a day, the letter of the day. And then they did another letter and they went through, and then they did this cycle 6 to 7 times throughout the year. So
yeah,
I think about 20 weeks, how many times can you cycle through the alphabet, honestly?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think like a lot of times, I get the feeling teachers, they worry about having that repetition over and over again, about it getting boring for the kids, of like, okay, we're going to read through all the letter names that we've learned every day. And that's going to get super boring for the kids. But actually, they don't get bored and they really need that repeated practice and they benefit from it. And so I don't know where I was going with that, but
I think that you don't even have, if you're doing like a letter of the day or a letter of the week, you don't even necessarily have to do that, because you're going to come back to that letter in a little, you're going to come back to that letter in less than a month, honestly, you know, like, so, and you're going to hit it a couple more times anyways throughout the school year. So if you're doing a system like that, then you don't really even necessarily have to go through, because again, you're not working towards mastery right now. Towards like after the third cycle, then maybe you're looking for more of that with some of your students, but it's more of like an introduction, exposure, the first one or two cycles.
And just to be clear for everyone, when you're doing letter sounds and focusing on that, what else in the realm of like phonics are you doing? Like phonological awareness kind of activities? Like you're not only focusing on letter sounds at that time, right? Well, maybe not that time, but like throughout the day, I mean.
Right. So that's a really good point, because you can bring in, so if you're teaching like the sound of the letter B, or you're teaching the letter B even, and get to the sound of the letter B, you can bring in that phonemic awareness. And now, okay, now let's think of words that start with the B sound, right? And or say words, and where do you hear the B sound? Do you hear it at the beginning? Do you hear it at the end? Things like that, different things to bring in that phonemic awareness, because when you do that and you connect your phonemic awareness and your phonics or your letter knowledge, you're just fast tracking those connections that kids need in their brains to become successful readers. So I know we talked about this last time, but like my ideal kindergarten would be just that and letter knowledge, and just spend the whole year doing that. And as a first grade teacher, if you did that, I know that my kids would come to me so prepared and ready to read. And you would probably have them reading by second semester anyways, if you did that all of first semester. So yeah, you can definitely bring in that phonemic awareness into your letter lessons too. If that day is the letter B, then bring that in throughout the day as you're teaching your other things. And I love phonemic awareness, because you can do it anytime. You know, yeah. You can do it in math. Get out your books, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. It's so easy to, once you have the knowledge of it, because I used to have to put a little reminder on my schedule because I would forget when I was first learning about it to incorporate it all the time. But once you get in the habit of doing that, it's so easy.
Yeah, it's a great time filler. We have a couple minutes transitioning.
It's perfect time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I could just like keep talking your ear off, but I am going to end it here so we don't keep going forever and ever. But I'm so glad you came back on the podcast. And a reminder that if you haven't heard that first episode, definitely worth listening to with Heidi. But Heidi, where can people find you if they want more information or they want to follow along like I do for what's the latest research coming out that we can use in our classrooms?
Yeah, I didn't even get to talk about the embedded mnemonics because there's research on that, but I have all
oh,
that.
Oh, sorry.
No, because there's so much to talk about with the alphabet. We will never cover all of it, I don't think, in an hour or however long episode. But I do have that information and that research and the things that I talked about today, too, on my website. So I believe that you'll link to that below in the episode. And then on social media, it's Dropping Knowledge with Heidi on all platforms. So I would love to connect with you and yeah, leave me comments, send me an email if you have any questions, but there's a lot more information. I get, like I said, resources and research on my website too.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Heidi.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Okay. If you're like me and you couldn't stop thinking about what Heidi was going to tell us about embedded mnemonics, I brought her back on for a quick little postscript here. P.S. Heidi, take it away.
Yes. P.S. We were just having a best conversation about it. And so I think it's helpful for everybody to know. I was just telling you that I was actually trying to do some research about having multiple target pictures with a letter. Because if kids just think A is for apple, you know, we want them to know that that short A sound is heard in a lot of different words. Anyways, I was doing research on that and I found research on embedded mnemonics. So embedded mnemonics is a picture in the shape of the letter that also represents that letter's sound. And there is research supporting embedded mnemonics. They found that kids learned their letters and sounds faster when they were taught with embedded mnemonics and that they less often forgot them and that they less often confused them with other letters and sounds. And so once I learned that, I quickly found myself an illustrator and put together a mnemonic alphabet with correct keywords because it didn't exist. I looked it up and it didn't exist. And so what else did I say about that?
We'll talk about your book and your cards that are on your website.
Okay. So I ended up self-publishing a book on Amazon. It's called P is for Paint. It has the embedded alphabet mnemonics on there. And then also on my website, there's flashcards, there's posters, there's handwriting sheets. Just because, like I said, if kids are presented with that picture in the shape of the letter representing that letter's sound, they just can learn their letters and sounds faster. And so one thing that we also talked about was that, you know, sometimes you might see the letter T with a tiger stripe design or like a tiger standing behind it. And that's not really necessarily a true embedded mnemonic. You would really want to try to find something that's more in the shape of that letter. So unless that tiger is doing some gymnastics and standing to make the letter T, that could work a little bit better. But when kids see those pictures, they can also see those letters and then also get that sound information as well.
And the other thing we said when I stopped recording, which I wish we hadn't done that, so that's why we're back on here, was you were giving me a really helpful tip of something I can do with my class tomorrow. It's switching the order of the keyword and the sound.
Yes. So we talked about that some programs or some teachers may teach A, apple, A. Well, what happens sometimes is that keyword should be a scaffold and we should be able to drop that off. And when it's in the middle, it's really hard to drop off. And I was telling you that I've had first graders who, you know, have memorized these things. So when they're trying to sound out a word, they're going through that whole chant. So they're going B, bat, B, A, apple, A, T, tumped. And then they forgot what they're even doing because they had to go through all of that. So putting that keyword at the end makes it easier for them to drop that off eventually because we don't want that forever. That's just a scaffold. That's to know initially that A as in apple, but A is also says A in a lot of other words as well. So just making that teeny switch can be really helpful too.
And I was saying, I've seen it with my students where it's almost like they've memorized the whole chain there, the whole chant, because they you almost feel like they can't identify which one is the name, which one is the sound, which one is the keyword. It's like all together in one thing. And so I think that one shift could really help with those kids, because at least, like you said, they'll have the letter name and the sound so close together that they might not need that keyword eventually.
Yeah, they shouldn't need that keyword eventually. You really want to be able to drop that off. And we want them to know these things, not to memorize the chant, but to be able to apply that knowledge.
Right.
So I think that just makes it easier for them to be able to do that when that keyword is at the end and can come off later on.
Okay, well, sorry everyone that we came back on, but it was worth it. And I'm going to stop recording and then we're going to stop talking so we don't keep having more things that we need to tell the world about.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to the Kindergarten Cafe podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for more information and resources, or just head straight to kindergartencafe.org for all the goodies. If you liked this episode, the best ways to show your support are to subscribe, leave a review, or send it to a friend. I'll be back next week with even more kindergarten tips. See you then.